This episode brought to you by Correlation and BankJoy. On the show today, we have Digital Defense's very own Ming Lim talking about cybersecurity challenges facing credit unions today, and then six steps on how to reduce this risk. Really important stuff here, so check it out. Welcome to our show, and on today's program, deep in the heart of Texas, is Ming Lim from Digital Defense. Ming, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you, Mike.
You are welcome. We were just talking about before the recording, the reason why I say you deep in the heart of Texas, because that's where you're calling from. So, and I love Texas. It's such a great state. It's a very large state, but you're in beautiful country for sure. So today we're talking about cybersecurity challenges facing credit unions today and six steps to reduce risk in this area too. So, oh boy, this is a good one, Ming. All right, so I'm going to start out with, I'm just going to dive right in here. So what are some cybersecurity risks facing credit unions today, especially as we do our best to emerge from the pandemic? So what's going on today that we need to know about?
You know, it's crazy what we've seen spike during this pandemic. You know, all of the concerns that we normally see, you know, on a day-to-day basis have really just exploded. Ransomware has just skyrocketed. Yep. You know, the bad actors had a great medium to leverage during the pandemic, obviously, with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. All the affiliated, you know, between the health concerns that individuals had to PPP loans that some of the smaller organizations, you know, were either applying for or trying to provide or funding, and all of these things, ransomware just ran rampant. Yeah, so in association with that, you know, all the malware and phishing affiliated, right? So with social media being a very prominent medium also for information dissemination, both, you know, accurate and inaccurate, mm-hmm. Or I should say misinformation dissemination as well, you know, it made for a really ripe target, you know, for everyone that ransomware would just became much more targeted and prominent there. We've still got the identity theft issues because of pandemic and a lot of folks losing their jobs. There was a lot of identity theft with unemployment identity theft and applying for those funds that were available.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We saw that, you know, denial of service attacks were on the rise for organizations as well, primarily because you didn't have nearly as many people in the building, so to speak, to help make or keep the network more resilient, mm-hmm. against that type of attack.
Yeah, yeah.
Many pandemic themed attacks, many supply chain attacks, which we've seen kind of the results of over the course of the last several months. Obviously, the supply chain attacks are one of the biggest concerns today. And if you think about kind of where that started, you know, Target, several years back now, we're talking almost a decade at this point, when their HVAC vendor was compromised to access the Target network. That was really kind of the start of targeting supply chain. So it causes credit unions today to really have to take a second look at all of the vendors that they're using, mm-hmm. all of their suppliers, and what type of connectivity, what type of data and information is being passed back and forth, and what kind of access they have to the credit union network as well.
Yeah, this stuff has just exploded. Not that it wasn't before, but gosh, the pandemic, like everything, it just amplified everything and even fraud. So it's just exploded.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the ransomware was just all in the headlines and continues to be. So what's the fallout from some of these risks? Because it can be very costly, and you guys put some numbers on this as well. So what are some of the fallout, obviously?
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned fraud, because, you know, I kind of highlighted identity theft early on, but, you know, utilizing fraud, we see kind of this doubled and triple dipping, both from ransomware and the fraud and identity theft, because not only are you, having your credentials and your ID stolen, that then is being utilized to initiate fraudulent wire transfers, card not present, funding or transactions, money transfers, all of these things that are taking place because of the unauthorized access. So, you know, that's obviously affecting the credit unions and all financial institutions, as well as the individual that was victimized here. But as far as, you know, costs and fallout, well, obviously, it's only increasing. So the Poneman Institute and IBM on an annual basis put together a study for the cost of a breach, right? A data breach. And what was interesting is that the average cost per record lost, which is always a mechanism that most organizations can use. If you think of a record as, you know, a customer file, an individual entity within your organization, you can kind of multiply that out and get an idea of what that would mean to your organization, right? So the number of members that a credit union has, multiply that by, I think it was like 143. It's been kind of hovering in that space for the last couple of years. That can give you an idea of what ultimately a compromise would cost the organization. And that typically includes, you know, not only the fines and fees, you know, affiliated with, but the recovery costs, the forensics that have to be conducted. But one of the big things that's not kind of calculated there is necessarily is the trust and reputational loss.
No doubt.
That the credit union, you know, undertakes, unfortunately. You don't want to be that headline, right? And, you know, the members trust you as their financial institution to take care of their money. And that trust is hard to rebuild if you undergo that type of event. You also, you know, with the regulatory fees, might come increased oversight. A lot of these organizations, a lot of governmental compliance organizations are looking at adding on, you know, more oversight, more audits on a regular basis until you get to securing whatever it is that, you know, was compromised in the first place. And then you've got also at more of a state and local level, more states, I think as of 2 years ago or so, all 50 states now require disclosures to the consumers if there is a data breach. So, you know, those are additional costs and fees that you have to maintain and update, and, you know, the credit reporting and credit monitoring that you have to then provide as a means of reparation. But then there's also the risk of repeat compromise. So we talk about that double dip again. You know, if in the instance of, say, a ransomware event, if the organization pays out, what we're seeing is that the bad actors know that you have cyber liability insurance. They know how much you're willing to pay. And if you don't take the steps to fix the issues, guess what? Another bad actor is going to come in right behind them. And this is the crazy part, what we've seen really rise this last year is ransomware as a service. It's become a business. We have ransomware actors who basically have established a foothold at an organization and then are basically selling access to that compromised entity for a fee to other bad actors. And that's how they're making money now. It's a business, and it's a big business.
So it would be RAAS, ransomware.
RAAS, ransomware as a service. Isn't that bananas?
Completely, but it's possible, and it's happening.
And it's happening. And, you know, so we've always talked about, again, we're going to go to that double and triple dip, tripled extortion in this particular case. So not only do you have ransomware as a service, okay, now you also have bad actors who are saying, all right, I've gotten into your network. You know, if it's ransomware that they're using as their initial attack vector, okay, pay me to unlock or decrypt your data. But you also have to pay an extra amount so that I don't leak that data.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So, you know, and this, that second extortion, that second or third extortion may not come right away.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
It may be months down the road and they're coming back for more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in general, being compromised today comes with many, many more repercussions than before. So lots of fallout from that perspective.
Oh my goodness, guys, this type of stuff just makes me want to crawl under a rock and say enough already, you know? Gosh.
I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's get to some of the steps to reduce risk. I mean, we can't cover all six of them, but maybe a couple of the main ones, maybe one more. So if you could just provide maybe two real quick and then kind of analyze those as well. So,
yeah. So, you know, Digital Defense put together kind of six steps or six things to take a look at when to try to reduce your risk. You've got to prioritize cybersecurity. And obviously, that's a very broad general statement here. One of the things, you know, to do in an effort of that is to create a culture of security and compliance. So what that means is that from the top down, from your CEO all the way down to the teller sitting, you know, at their station, everyone has to have security top of mind. Completely. So that includes talking about this on a regular basis, making it, you know, keeping it in the conversations. Every action that you're taking takes security, you know, in mind. Having a seat at the board or the supervisory committee, making sure that they're aware of the risks of, of cyber attacks. Mm-hmm. And then also training from that perspective. We've got to prioritize that. Every single individual has to be involved. No one is exempt because everyone can be a potential victim or target of ransomware, you know, a phishing attack, any of these things. So that would be number one. Okay. We really have to prioritize cybersecurity. For too long, you know, it's kind of been not necessarily the redheaded stepchild, as I always like to say, but, you know, it was a necessary evil, right? You had to have a security team, and it was something that you didn't want to have to spend money on. It's not a revenue generator, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but cybersecurity can be leveraged positively for your organization because you're able to also disseminate to your members and others that, hey, we're doing all of these things proactively to protect you. You know, so that just helps to reassure your members and again, increase that trust, knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, I like that type of, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I like that type of messaging from my credit union when they send me emails or anything in the mail, any type of communication from them. Say, hey, you know what? We got your back when it comes to this type of stuff. Because, I mean, we had some major ransomware out here in Southern California with a healthcare provider out here. And it really affected thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And so, but we got messages from, you know, our financial institution, our credit union in this case, saying, hey, you know what? We realize this made big news, but we just want to know that we got your back essentially, you know, by doing these three, you know, these steps or whatever. So, yeah, so I totally get that.
I mean, it's a reassurance that, you know, they're on top of it. They're taking the steps necessary to protect not only their organization, but you as a member as well.
So,
and that's huge. That's huge, right? And then, you know, the second piece is really making sure that you're conducting regular assessments and testing. We have very much in the credit union space, a lot of organizations who may not have a lot of in-house expertise, right? Mm-hmm. They're running very slim from a personnel perspective, resourcing perspective. They may not necessarily have the expertise in-house to be able to conduct these assessments and run the scanning and testing on a regular basis on their own. So making sure that you're testing on a regular basis, this means not once a year. It's not enough. Quarterly.
Once a day, come on. Once every hour.
Exactly.
I know I'm being extreme here, but my goodness.
Well, and you know, this best practices recommends monthly or anytime there's a system change.
Okay.
Right. And so monthly would be our minimum recommendation. We do still have organizations we see that are running scans on a quarterly basis just because they don't have the resources to consume the data, which is totally understandable.
Right.
But the key there is not just testing, but also fixing. One of the things that we've seen during the pandemic is kind of a rise in kind of the, we'll call it old school techniques, fileless attacks. Some of these, some of the vulnerabilities we see on our customer scans have been around for a decade or more. Right. And so if there's a fix for it, we really recommend that you take the time to make that fix.
Yep.
We have a lot of organizations who are implementing more risk-based methodologies to prioritize their remediation efforts and kind of help them better manage their risk. And that's fantastic because that basically says, all right, you know, I have all of these conditions, all of these weaknesses on my network. I know which systems are my most important devices and systems, right? That can't go down due to an attack or, you know, can't have data loss, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now I need to see, I can't fix everything, but I know that these specific threats, maybe it's certain pieces of malware or toolkits that are out in the wild are active and I have relevant vulnerabilities to those toolkits or malware that are vulnerable.
Yep.
I need to fix those because the likelihood that those will be leveraged against me is, you know, exponentially higher than something that doesn't have a weaponized toolkit or a weaponized piece of malware mm-hmm. that can be exploited, right? So a lot of organizations are taking this tactic and it's really helping them to focus on what they need to fix today, now, before I sit down and have my cup of coffee.
Right.
So that really helps. So, you know, updating their regular, their software regularly, doing the training, conducting the tests, but also fixing the issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I would highly recommend, you know, consulting their vulnerability scanning vendor, their endpoint protection vendor, their SIM vendor, whoever their security expert is. For recommendations too on helping with prioritization if that's something that's of a challenge.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is great stuff here, Ming. I'm going to leave the other four to folks to, we're going to put a link in the show notes so people can get to the other four. But those top two are certainly incredibly important. Oh my gosh, it's such an important topic all around for sure. So I assume we go to Digital Defense's website and go and find it from there. And
absolutely. We have lots of resources there available. You know, we have industry-leading vulnerability scanning tool that is super easy to use because, hey, you know, we love our credit unions. We know the struggles that they go through, and we've been working with you guys for over two decades.
Yeah, indeed. Good stuff. Anything else here to wrap up, Ming? I mean, I know we could probably go 2 hours on this topic, but you got a job to do. I don't want to keep you from it, but any final thoughts on this one?
No, I love talking about cybersecurity. And I think that one of the statements, a common saying, that common sense is not so common. We really have to use common sense. We really need to increase everyone's common sense kind of baseline. Because if we do that, I think that we'll definitely reduce the attack surface that bad actors and malicious actors have.
Yeah.
Because we're thinking about security first.
Right. Right.
And you know, so that I think is one of the most important things. We've got to continue to train. We've got to continue to test. We've got to continue to fix things. It doesn't have to be hard. It's just the day-to-day activities. We have to keep security top of mind and use common sense above all.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, really raising the common sense bar. I like that. That's a good. I haven't heard that one yet, so I'm going to keep that one in mind for sure. Yeah, a lot of this stuff is common sense. You know, just don't click on that link, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't and look familiar, you know, when in doubt.
Verify. What is it? The trust that verify, right? You see something, verify before you open it if you have any inklings. So I think that's...
But Ming, it's so easy to click on that link and see what it is. It takes a millisecond.
You know, one of the crazy things is that with the ransomware, the bad actors are leveraging social media. in this. So the more information you're sharing on social media, the more information that can be used against you. And this is something that I think a lot of folks don't necessarily realize. And to the extent even today where phishing emails are very targeted, because if you get an email about, you know, healthcare changes, well, that's pretty darn enticing, because that's important, right? Healthcare costs are rising, and, you know, figuring out how to manage that can be very, very important. And so if an email, you know, has subject lines like that, you've got to take a second look and make sure that it did come from your HR department and it, you know, was intended and not a phishing email. So it's really important, again, with, you know, with phishing and ransomware and the business email compromise that's occurring, it's that trust but verify. If it doesn't look right, take a moment, ask IT, ask MIS, ask HR before clicking on any links.
Agreed. Great words to live by for sure, especially in today's day and age. All right, Ming, well, I'm going to let you get back to work because you got an important job to do to protecting us. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was a great talking to you.
Indeed. Well, let's do it again. All right. This was a lot of fun and very important as well. So thank you as well.